Well, that was certainly worth the wait, wasn't it? After the longest layoff before the finals in NBA history, we had one of the greatest game ones that we've seen in quite some time, probably going back to 1997 when Jordan hit the game winner over Brian Russell. Danny, what did you think of this game? Did this play out how you expected? Any big surprises for you?
Well, there were a lot of surprises over various points in the game. The fact that Kerr went to Clay on Kyrie early was very surprising to me. I wasn't
very first possession of the game.
Yeah, I mean that's as early as you can do, and I wanted the Warriors. I was an advocate for them trying to make LeBron beat them as a scorer, but I didn't expect to see it the way that we saw it this early.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't getting that many amazing shots.
Right.
You know, it wasn't like he wasn't really, and I think they were helping enough that like he wasn't able to just put his guy in the goal. I mean, we'll get to their defense on LeBron and what they might do to change up a little bit subtly. I mean, I think generally they had the right idea. One of the big reasons that I think they wanted to go with Clay on Kyrie was because they love that 3-1 pick and roll and 1-3 pick and roll, and they felt like Clay could switch on to LeBron more effectively. That actually did not really turn out to be the case. Clay was completely ineffective on LeBron, especially in the fourth quarter, which we're going to really run down a lot of those plays and do one of our hardcore breakdowns, which I've really been missing, frankly. So, yeah, I mean, that was one thing. Anything else that surprised you about the game?
Let me think. Well, in a way, it surprised me. In a way, it didn't, that Maurice Spates had that offensive explosion where he took a lot of shots.
Yeah, that much even, I thought, was a surprise, yeah.
I don't think they expected him to play that much. I think it was more that he played well and just stayed in.
Yeah, no, I thought that this would not be a big series for him, with both the need to provide more help defense on the penetration and keep Cleveland off the offensive boards. But they were able to find some good minutes for him. I think he was in during the periods when LeBron was out, which were, of course, limited. But he probably played at least half of his minutes during those periods when maybe it wasn't quite as important to have the level of help that Bogut and Azeli can provide. But, yeah, he hit some big jump shots, especially to help bring them back when things looked rather dire early on in the first quarter.
And one of the things that really stood out to me when you think it was nice to actually have a little bit of time to really process this game was that the Warriors had a rough first quarter. I mean, that was one. It wasn't the worst first quarter they've had in the playoffs. I think the Rockets pretty clearly take the cake on that. But they were able to rebound from that and really play a lot better the rest of the game.
Yeah, a couple of things I noticed in the first quarter. The Cavs came out, and this was pretty effective. I don't quite understand why they went away from this, because it didn't seem like they were getting burned at all. They were denying the ball inbounds, and it wasn't so much Kyrie, who started on Curry, as it turned out, and actually did just fine before his unfortunate injury. They were having their four-man a lot of times deny the ball inbounds to Curry and just stop any Golden State runs off of Cleveland makes, of which there were many in that first quarter. I think maybe the reason they got away from it was because Thompson just had to play so many minutes and it was wearing on him. He's a pretty high effort guy. Although he was also really effective in that first quarter on the offensive glass. They had four offensive rebounds, but then another two team offensive rebounds where they were able to force foul calls or make the ball go out of bounds. So they were dominant in that first quarter, and again in the third on the offensive glass.
Yeah, they really were. And of the, I was able to look at the footage for the non-team ones. I think they do that separately. I didn't have access to that. But of the four, I was shocked that none of the four in the first half were off LeBron misses. Though a lot of them were in the second half. We'll talk about the full stat with it. But in my brain, I thought that more of them were. And it is fun to see how sometimes your memory and your eye test differ from what actually happened.
Well, so on those offensive rebounds, was that, you know, a failure to box out? Like, was it off of penetration where the boards were getting opened up? Like, what was happening on those plays? My recollection was that they were just kind of longer rebounds that they were just getting beat to Golden State, was it? But is that right?
Two of them were, yeah. And then the other two were penetration that they didn't really seal off. Kyrie, I think two of them were off Kyrie drives. And so, and then later on, it was more of those kind of longer, LeBron took a mid-range shot and then it bounced around and they got it. That one that stood out to me, I thought it was going to matter to the outcome of the game when Mozgov in the fourth quarter, the ball just kind of bounced around. He just drilled it out basically almost to backcourt and the Cavs got another possession late in the game.
Yeah. And so in the second quarter, they're able to come back. What was the key to that Warriors comeback in your eyes to get it back tied in the second quarter?
A big part of it was LeBron sitting. That stretch, it was. I alluded to it in the first quarter, so before he had sat, that it felt to me like it was going to be another one of those series where the Cavs were going to fight him pretty even when LeBron was out there and just get slaughtered when he sat. And Cleveland went 1-for-7 in that stretch, and they only cut the lead from 10-6, but I think that was notable. And other than that, I think that the Warriors did a much better job on the defensive boards in the second quarter than they did in the first quarter. I think three of the four, not including the team offensive rebounds that the Cavs got in that stretch were in the first half were in the first 6 minutes of the first quarter. So that means there was only one in the rest of it. I think that was in the middle of the second quarter. So that was a big part of it. And I thought the defense cinched up and they stopped missing some of the open shots they missed in the first quarter too.
Yeah, they really needed to just clean things up a little bit. The Cavs actually got out and transitioned pretty well in that first quarter as well. LeBron was able to get to the basket, get some fouls before the help could get there. The Cavs completely abandoned the transition game as time went on, and it was a really high possession first quarter, 25 possessions in the first quarter, but then there were only 88 possessions through the end of regulation. So things really, really slowed down. And the Cavs, you know, they pound the air out of the ball with those ISOs. And then when you get an offensive rebound, then that's another 24 seconds for them to pound the ball out of an ISO again, because it's rare that Thompson or Mozgov will actually go back up with their offensive rebound. And, you know, that was Golden State, although they did give up the offensive rebounds, did a great job getting out on 3-point shooters after the offensive rebound occurred. I think that might have even been an emphasis of theirs that, all right, we're going to give up some offensive rebounds. Let's be ready for it. And they were able to stay matched up and avoid that. So going 1-of-11 on second chances was a big demerit for Cleveland. They were not able to convert on their offensive boards.
Yeah, and particularly one guy that, when we're talking about the first half, that I want to single out for praise is Timofey Mozgov. He was awesome. His play was just, he was great. I thought he, when I was thinking about the first half, he did have, I think, two kind of poster style dunks in the second half. But to me, in the first half, it felt like he was really putting his imprint on this game.
Yeah, I think at one point, the Warriors were shooting 15 of 31 at the rim. And that was, they definitely missed some bunnies for sure. And some easy ones when he wasn't in there or wasn't there to affect it. But especially in the first quarter and into the end of the second quarter, he was fantastic. Just they could not get a shot off against him inside, whether, you know, Green had particular trouble with him. Bogut was totally scared out of his mind. They gave up quite a few chances to shoot layups, to throw it back out to shooters once they Mozgov started to have the effect. So, yeah, he played a fantastic game, not quite as good as the game that he had 93 points and 29 rebounds for the Nuggets last year, but pretty close.
And overall in the game, the Warriors shot 16 to 34 in the restricted area, but the stat using the NBA player tracking that really stood out to me was on what are counted as defended shots at the rim. The Warriors were 3 of 21, which is astonishing.
Yeah, wow, that is awful. Yeah, that's a good stat to have. I mean, so Thompson was fantastic at that. Mozgov was, and I mean, I still think the Warriors could have done a little better.
Oh, sure. And
gotten some more foul calls on those plays too, but yeah, that was Cleveland's defense. I think it's for real. That was one of the big takeaways for me in the first half, at least. Was I thought they did reasonably well after that first quarter defending Cleveland, and you know LeBron was scoring, but we'll get more to what his ISOs were doing. But I don't think it was that painful for them. They just couldn't score. They thought they were getting kind of the shots they wanted, and they just wouldn't go down at the rim.
Yeah, I definitely agree with all that. You want to move on to the second half, or do you have anything else from the first?
Yeah. No, let's move on to that. And one great stat that the Synergy account tweeted out, that's always a good follow, @SynergySST on Twitter, Steph Curry shooting 61% in isolation situations after opposing defenses switched the pick and roll. And that was something that the Cavs were doing a ton. Curry did not absolutely go off in this game. 10 out of 20 from the field, 26 points. But, I think he was able to, someone tweeted that Kyrie outplayed Steph. And that's just like, I think that that's just not true. Steph was more efficient. He just has a much bigger role as the engine that is getting everyone else shots in this Golden State offense, whereas Kyrie, most of the time, is a secondary option with everybody worried about LeBron. So you can't, even though, and Kyrie wasn't even as efficient as Steph was anyway. So you, if they score the same number of points, you can't necessarily say that they're having the same level of impact on the game. Although Kyrie did have a very nice game, and his passing vision was very impressive in this game.
And his defense. I'm somebody who's criticized his defense for his entire career, and it was deserved. His defense, and tonight was the best game I've ever seen him play on that end.
Yeah, he had two block shots on Curry, which is surprising. Four steals. Really good at that. I still think that his Achilles heel, you know, and hopefully he'll be able to even play to have this have this exposed if it is, but is working off of screens. And, Golden State was able to kind of get whatever they wanted when they got a 1-5 pick and roll going with Kyrie and Mozgov involved in it. They were not really able to defend that very well. But, yeah, I mean, he certainly did much better than I anticipated. They did not have to go to Shumpert. They were able to hold down Thompson relatively well through most of the game, although Thompson was able to get to the line, which is not his forte, for 8 makes and 8 attempts. That was huge.
Yeah. It was, and we'll talk about the block late in the game, but I noticed it a lot more early. Like, I just thought he was contesting, he was doing it better. You're right that it changed over the course. It changed over the course of it. Let's see, what other things from the third quarter?
This was when it really got ugly, I think, with the Warriors not getting the long rebounds.
Yes.
There are so many times when, and by the way, I was sitting up in the upper deck. I was right next to section 224. Those fans are awesome. They were like even a level above the entire rest of the arena. So if you were sitting in section 224 tonight, yourself a round of applause, which you probably did many times over actually during the game anyway. So, but anyway, where was I? So, you know, you could feel the frustration from the fans as they would get these misses. The ball would kind of bounce out and then Golden State just wasn't able to hustle and go get it.
Yeah, and one stat that it was a whole game, but this quarter was what swung it, was that Cleveland got 36% of offensive rebound chances when Thompson and Mozgov were on the floor together. And that's absurdly high. I had Seth Partno on my show earlier in the week previewing the finals, and he talked about how they were at about a third then, so they actually did a little bit over that in this game. And if you're that's just backbreaking for a defense, especially when you're forcing a lot of first possession misses. And Cleveland ended up, you know, as you said, they shot 1 of 11 on second chance looks, but it's still backbreaking all the same. And you have to play defense for another 24 plus seconds.
Yeah, and although, you know, I'm not sure. I think the Warriors started to get the offensive rebounding solid as time went on, and I do think that Cleveland is going to ultimately struggle with both those guys on the floor and the help instincts of Green and Bogut, that those guys are going to start to figure out the rhythm of helping on the LeBron ISOs and still managing to keep those guys off the boards. Mozgov was fantastic, though, in timing his cuts. Like, he really was not camping out right under the rim. What he would do is he'd kind of line up on the opposite elbow from James. James was usually on the trying to post up near the left block. And then as soon as Bogut would come over, he would get a running start and James could hit him on the move. And that's how he was able to finish, some really nice dunks by getting the ball on a running start instead of just catching a dump off where he's got to explode. You know, he's much better on the move as a lot of guys are, where you can jump a lot higher that way.
Yeah, and he did that one play that I thought about that. He didn't end up getting the basket, but on the big foul late when he ended up making those two huge free throws, that was exactly what happened on that play.
Yeah, and Seth tweeted out that they were plus 11 in regulation with Mozgov and Thompson on the floor. So maybe that worked a little better. I think certainly the defense is better with those guys on the floor as well, although we'll see now if Golden State is emboldened by the success of the small lineup in the overtime, if they go a little bit more with that and try to run Mozgov off the floor and kind of live with the offensive rebounding.
Yeah, I agree with that. And also, I mean, when you're running the offense that they're running, you're not really sabotaging anything.
All right, well, so let's get into now that fourth quarter. You know, I thought the Cleveland bench did not do well. Dellavedova had a pretty miserable game. He tried some of his little tricks on Curry, got called for a couple of fouls. Curry also is someone who is going to move tirelessly off the ball, whereas Jeff Teague, Derrick Rose, especially in earlier times, Deli could sort of do his thing where he gets up in his face and annoys him and doesn't let him move. Well, Curry's in way too good a shape for that. He's too smart at moving off the ball, and he was really able to abuse Dellavedova a few times and create some open looks there. So now with Kyrie being injured, Dellavedova is going to have to step up, and we'll see whether his success earlier in the playoffs was the result of who he was playing, because now he's going to be on a prime stage guarding Stephen Curry.
Yeah, and one of the other defensive issues with this game, and I joked during the game that you and I could spend an hour on it, is that there was another stretch in this quarter where Steve Kerr put Leandro Barbosa on Kyrie Irving, and Irving just roasted him.
Yeah, I really had no idea why they wouldn't put Barbosa on Shumpert when Shumpert was in during those periods.
Anyone else?
Yeah, and why not put Livingston is a very, very good point guard defender. I think he does a really nice job on guys like Kyrie. So I don't know why they didn't do that. And yeah, I mean, they dodged a few bullets right at the start of the fourth quarter. And that was when LeBron was out. Thompson was also out, as was Curry. And, you know, it's surprising that they had some minutes without Curry and Clay on the floor. I think that, but, you know, when they put Clay back in with that lineup to start the second and fourth quarters, they don't really play any better. So I understand why they don't necessarily do that, to try to get Clay a little bit more rest. I think he's a guy who does better when he gets a little bit more rest. But, yeah, I mean, Kyrie was able to get right to the basket, two layups. He also got a wide open three with Barbosa guarding him in pick and rolls that he missed. So yeah, I think the Warriors dodged a bullet there. They dodged quite a few bullets on open threes by Cleveland. What did they shoot on open threes in this game?
Okay, so the NBA stats classified in wide open, open, and then tight. I think there might be a fourth category, but I didn't write that one down. In wide open 3-point looks, the Cavs went 3 for 9, which is not great. And then in open looks, so those are more contested, they were 5 for 11.
Yeah, and then so what were they on tightly defended?
1 of 10.
Wow, so that 10 tightly defended threes is a lot of threes to be taking. I mean, I don't look at that stats that regularly, but usually you're shooting a three because you're open. It's a hard shot, like, so you're not going to shoot it unless you're open. So taking that many tightly defended threes, I think, is a good sign for Golden State's defense. They did miss a couple of threes, like Kyrie had a miss. J.R. Smith had a miss off of a Kyrie penetration in the fourth, and then Smith missed that one in the overtime that hit the side of the backboard. But maybe I'm just remembering those more than I should, because 3 out of 9, I mean, that's not, you know, maybe they make one more of those normally.
And on those,
not necessarily a key.
And for reference, on the wide open ones, the Warriors were 3 of 11, and on tight ones, the Warriors were 1 out of 5.
Yeah, okay. So, I think also another thing that they might try more of, and this is not something they do that much, I actually think that Sean Livingston is a pretty good pick and roll point guard. I'd like to see them try that a little bit more, especially when he is playing with either Thompson or Curry or even both, because with that shooting around, I think he can actually be real effective. He can see over the defense. Usually seems like good things happen when he gets in pick and roll, even though it's not something that they run a ton of.
Yeah, I completely support that as well, and that's also part of the reason why I really like the Livingston and Curry lineups, is that you have two guys that are credible in those situations, so that gives you so much more creative flexibility in terms of how you want to run your offense, and also how you have to think defensively.
There were three real back-breaking threes that Cleveland gave up in the fourth quarter, kind of weird plays. You know, the first one was Spates missed two shots in a row, tough shots in the lane. Barnes was able to beat Shumpert twice in a row to get the rebound, and then that resulted in an Andre Iguodala three-pointer. So that was right at the start. They were down two, and that enabled the Warriors to go up. So then there were a lot of plays then where LeBron was just able to start scoring on Klay Thompson. They would run 3-1 pick and roll after the starters all came back in with about eight minutes left in the fourth. They would run a 3-1 pick and roll, and LeBron scored about four buckets in a row on Thompson in all manner. I mean, you know, it was the same kind of thing as it was with Harden, where, you know, it seemed like good D, but I think, again, LeBron is someone who knows that Klay's not going to block his shot. Klay doesn't have that kind of sneaky athleticism. He's a little bit, doesn't have a ton of length, not that strong, just not a guy who's necessarily going to surprise you. I don't think he's that great of an isolation defender. Actually, he's more of a kind of dogged, follow you off of screens guys, recover, use your length to bother the shot from behind. I think he's good at that, not so much at isolation D, especially against bigger players. And LeBron, you know, despite the fact they were contested, really just roasted him. And that was sort of another time when the crowd was like, all right, is he really making all these? He made like four shots in a row.
Yeah, and as you said, like that's a challenge with when you're dealing with professional athletes, especially elite guys, is that they know what they need. And Klay, as you said, I've always defined Klay as more of an effort-based defender, which is good. You know, an effort-based defender can do really well in the league, but that doesn't work on everyone. And especially, actually, you could make an argument that the two hardest guys that Klay guards in the league for that would be those two, and a third guy that he doesn't guard him because their teammates is Stephen Curry.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like, you know, people lock these dudes down or anything, like, you know, that Thompson's like a bad defender, but, you know, it is true, I think, that he's not able to make those type of scores uncomfortable in a way that some other defenders are. So why don't we pick it up here with 6 minutes left. This was a key play to me as well, and it was a play where Curry came off a dribble handoff. Curry came off a screen underneath. Mozgov did a nice job to switch out on him, and James was just parked at the free throw line. He did this a couple of times, and Andre, despite losing his shoe, just cut to the corner. James was there to help out Mozgov, who was one-on-one against Curry, and Curry just threw it to the corner. Iguodala, wide open left corner three that he made. Maybe you could say that was an overhelp by James, but also when Mozgov is one-on-one out in the perimeter, you have to be aware of the help too.
Yeah, you definitely do. And that led into a situation that drove me crazy. I don't know if you saw it the same way I did, which was on the other end, they ran another 3-2 pick and roll. And Thompson ended up still on Kyrie, and LeBron had the ball, and he got into a kind of a no man's land, and he was not really close enough to defend LeBron, but moved over enough to make Kyrie have a wide open shot. LeBron hits him, and Kyrie just drills it.
Yeah. Then the Warriors came down. Next time, Thompson was able to drive past Smith after Curry got stuck underneath, had to throw it way out all the way to midcourt, but then Thompson was just able to blow by J.R. Smith and get a foul. Not really much help there on that drive. Then you'll never guess what Cleveland ran the next time down.
Yeah, let's another 3-1?
Yeah. So then it was the switch. This is part of the stretch where James was just lighting up Thompson. He drove to the left block and hit just an incredibly tough floater over really, really good help. And that led to the last of these threes that just broke Cleveland's back. So Cleveland is up 91-87 at this point. James is rolling. It's not looking great for the home team, and the Warriors were able to quickly inbound after that make. Smith was just kind of hanging out, you know, near the top of the key as the Warriors dribbled down. I don't know whether he thought he was supposed to pick up Curry or not, but Kyrie was right there. There wasn't an issue with that, and Thompson just walked into a wide-open three on the right wing, and he drained it to get him within one.
And I believe, and this is kind of crazy, that was the only right wing three the Warriors made in this whole game.
Yeah, and they're usually pretty good from there. So the next time down, I think you could tell that Iguodala was getting a little frustrated that James was lighting up Klay, because they did not switch that time on what was a a 1-3 pick and roll. And it's interesting the way that they play this. Most teams just have the guy guarding James hedge way out. I might play it a little differently, where I kind of drop him back a little bit more, contain the ball handler slightly more, and say, all right, LeBron James, if you want to shoot a pick and pop, with the way his jumper is working right now, you might as well do that. I haven't seen anyone play it that way. They might try that.
That's what the Spurs did last year, right?
Well, I don't know if it was necessarily on that specific play, but they generally were trying to lay back and let James shoot. And that was a strategy for the Warriors in this game as well, to go under when James is the ball handler in a pick and roll. The Cavs did not run a ton of pick and rolls with Biggs and James. And they got nice plays off of that when they did. You'd like to see them go to that a little bit more. And then you might be able to involve shooters on the weak side a little bit more with that action too. But yeah, I mean, James, I think, largely did pretty well shooting his jump shot when they just totally backed off and gave it to him. It was when it started to get more contested that he struggled.
Yeah, I'm definitely on point. So back on the possession we're talking about, they didn't switch. Kyrie ended up getting a wide open three but missed it. Well, I think we didn't talk about the result of the play.
Yeah. So yeah, he did miss it. I mean, that was kind of a lucky miss for Golden State. You know, that's a shot you expect that Kyrie's going to hit at a pretty good rate. Next time down, Mozgov switched out on Curry, and he airballed a three. Draymond Green didn't foul out, but got his fifth on a really cheap call. Probably not a great call, as he had his hand on the ball, and it was one of those things where Thompson ripped the ball away from him, and it sort of looked like Green was fouling him because he had his hand on the ball for a time. Not the greatest call, and the ref who called it didn't have a very good look at the play on the sideline.
And that ties in with one of the storylines for me of the whole playoffs. You and I have spent a fair amount of time talking about it, is that how Draymond picked up one of his fouls was that it's broadly intelligent, but in that circumstance, it's flawed. It was at the end of the first half. He fouled LeBron with, I think it was 3 seconds left in the half, basically to just force them to try it out again. I believe J.R. Smith made a three, ended up doing it. Yeah. But the reason that you do that is smart. But the problem with it is, you don't want to do it with a player who might get in foul trouble, because as we saw with Tim Duncan in a couple Spurs Clippers games, you never want to give away a foul for a guy who commits fouls and who you have to have in the game.
Yeah, I think it's, I really enjoy when teams are hoisted by their own petard doing that, because it's, I mean, I don't know, just taking a foul is just cheap. It's not basketball, you know, and granted it's smart to do sometimes for sure. And I think the Cavs actually gave up some really good chances in the fourth quarter to foul Bogut or to foul Iguodala. Had like that dunk at the end of the third quarter after he got the steal on LeBron. That was a huge play too.
Yeah.
And Smith could have just fouled him and he didn't. Maybe JR has learned his lesson after the flagrant on Jay Crowder or something. But you know, he could have at least tried to wrap Andre up or something, because he's a terrible free throw shooter. But that said, I think when teams do intentionally foul and then, you know, it ends up coming back to haunt them, I do enjoy that a little bit as a basketball purist.
I wouldn't have thought of you as being more sadistic than me, but hey.
Sadistic might be a slight overstatement.
Oh, come on. You have to be fine with me making a few overstatements. It's a part of the show.
Yeah.
So would you want to get straight into the next? So the next possession was one of those. Actually, we saw more of it from both of these teams, I think, in this game than we saw more frequently, which was a double high screen.
Yeah, and you know, it was funny when the Cavs actually ran something. They got nice action. Like, this was, so Kyrie, it was Mozgov on one side, James on the other. Kyrie came off the screen for Mozgov, and then James popped out to the arc. He was able to get the ball. Bogut reacted to him, and this was the play where Mozgov just dunked all over Green. Another play where Mozgov was able to get a running start. And I will say this, you know, I go so back and forth on this ISO ball that LeBron really has played, you know, much of the year. And because I want to say that it's selfish, right? Like, it seems selfish. He has the ball in his hands all the time. He's just pounding it and pounding it and pounding it and pounding it. So, and you could say, all right, well, you know, he finds the open man every time they double him. That's true, but it's also like, all right, I have to be the one who starts the play rather than someone else starts the play, and then they can reverse the ball to me in a situation where I might have some of an advantage. So I kind of hate watching it, but at the same time, he's also a great passer, and he looked at Mozgov when he was the open guy several times. It worked out quite a few times. It didn't quite a few other times. So, you know, it's hard to say that James is selfish, but then again, you know, he also is initiating every play.
The way that I would phrase it is, if you're going to do it with anybody, you do it with LeBron, but it's still not the optimal way to use him.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, and it is kind of a shame for me, especially with Kyrie being healthy in this game for most of the game, to see how they're playing when you compare to how he was used in Miami. And, you know, I'd probably beat this horse a little bit too hard. So why don't we just continue on with what happened there. The next play was more trouble with the Cavs communicating. This was a dribble handoff from Curry to Thompson, who then received a Bogut screen going to the middle. Mozgov had to help out on Thompson, and that left Kyrie and Shumpert guarding the combination of Curry and Bogut. Both of them went to Curry, and then Bogut was able to go right to the rim and get a dunk. A nice look from Clay.
Yeah, and what you were talking about, that kind of communication thing, one thing that I noticed, I went back through some of the video, I was thinking on my brain, and not with Bogut, but with Draymond Green, he had 4 made field goals in this game. I believe 3 of them were on kind of mess-ups or broken plays, where it was, you know, he made a cut and got it, like, ended up being, you know, clean looks. And, you know, obviously he's going to get some baskets. You know, it's not like, hey, you can shut him down, but it makes it so much harder on yourself when you're giving those away.
Yeah, to me, the Cavs did a little trapping of the pick and roll in this game. And I think if it's a 1-4 pick and roll with Green, Green did not hit a 3-pointer in this game. I would say we're going to trap the 1-4 pick and roll. You're going to throw it to Green, and we're just going to lay back and say, all right, Draymond Green, you're going to need to hit 3 jump shots in a row. You know, we're just going to have Mozgov stand under the basket with Bogut, you know, so you're not going to be able to alley-oop it to him. And you either need to score over Mozgov at the rim, or you need to make a three, or make a mid-range jumper or a floater, and you need to do that 3-4 times in a row before we're going to change that.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page there.
Yeah, so I was surprised. I mean, you know, Cleveland has not necessarily been trapping the pick and roll, but a lot of people changed what they do for Steph, and they had a week to practice it beforehand. Maybe they will change that up in game 2, because Green did not have the greatest offensive game. So we'll see what happens there, but I would say you're going to need to beat me scoring the ball, Draymond Green, and I'm not going to change up until you do that.
Yep. So let's get back into the action. I'm getting to the right place. You wanted to talk about the next play?
Yeah. At this point, Tristan Thompson went out, and they went small with Mozgov at center. With how he was playing, I think Blatt decided they wanted to go small but have Mozgov rather than Thompson. And Green was guarding Smith. This was the Kyrie great pick and roll. Found weak side for Smith. Smith wide open. He said that he likes contested shots better than open shots. And
they're the only ones that count.
I kind of understand the psychology there, because an open shot, it's like, all right, there's all this pressure to make it, right? Whereas if it's contested, you think, all right, people don't expect me to make this, so I can kind of just shoot it free and easy. There's no pressure on me to make this. That's not true for a lot of people. I think a lot of people kind of feel guilty when they take a contested shot. So, but I don't think he has a conscience in that way. I think it's more he feels bad when he misses an open one.
Yeah, I agree with that. And then the next possession was, it felt like one that, emotionally for the crowd, I wasn't in the arena, but one that it seemed like it mattered. So the Warriors pushed, LeBron ended up on Curry, and he ended up, I think it was that he drove and LeBron just gave him too much space. This is the one where he hesitated for a second and made the shot.
He had a fake spin. I don't know. Again, Cleveland had their troubles getting matched up in transition, even after, you know, and it wasn't even really, you know, that was like a shot where, you know, JR just took a normal three. It was a good shot. They could have easily gotten back, but somehow they ended up with LeBron on Curry. And Curry, frankly, made him look silly. He did a fake spin move and then just took a nice, easy practice gym jumper from about maybe 19 feet or so over LeBron. And the crowd loved it whenever LeBron guarded Curry. There was one time in the first half where he beat LeBron and ended up scoring. And, that was absolutely something. Like, there, you would feel this buzz go through the crowd whenever LeBron was on Curry. I mean, they really, the respect that opposing crowds have for LeBron at this point is, pretty remarkable.
That actually, if you remember, that actually happened in the Pelican series too, whenever, for, in both arenas, whenever Davis and Curry guarded each other.
Yeah, this is, I mean, this
was, but this was legit.
More than that, yeah. So, and that was a key shot as well. Then LeBron went to just a straight ISO on Andre. There was no even like, rudimentary 3-1 action or anything like that. And Andre did a great job when he was actually on him. LeBron did so much more of his damage against Barnes or against Thompson on a switch. I thought that both Green, for the few times that he was matched up against LeBron, and Iguodala did well. There were not that many easy shots that LeBron got, and Iguodala did really well against him down the stretch when he was able to stay on him.
So I don't have stats.
Forced a tough fadeaway.
Yeah, I don't have stats for when he was the closest defender. I think that data might be out there. I didn't have it for this. But when Andre Iguodala was in the game, LeBron had 22 shots. Only two of those shots were in the restricted area, and only 9 of those 22 were in the paint. So that's showing you that he was taking more difficult looks. And as I said, that's not with him as the primary defender, but that's just with him in the game. That makes it a lot harder on a guy like LeBron, who's just so dangerous in the paint. If he's shooting, whether it's settling or whether it be that it's just how it goes, those are much harder looks than you expect. He made more of them in this kind of a game than he normally would. But if you're getting those looks, you have to be satisfied with it.
Yeah, and I watch all LeBron's made field goals and fouls, and really only, I think, like 4 or 5 of them came on Andre. But again, you know, there are a lot of possessions where Andre was starting off on him, and then they switched up, and it ended up being Thompson or something like that. So, all right. Then the next time down, Thompson, not really much of a cut, just received a pass on the left wing, and he kind of did like the Dunleavy cut. He started his move right as he caught the ball and was able to blow by Irving. Do you remember this play? I didn't really see where the foul happened, though, despite the fact that he was able to get into the lane on Irving. He came up really short on a floater, so maybe there was something, but I couldn't see it.
I thought when I heard there was a whistle, I thought Bogut had gotten fouled on the rebound. I didn't think
that's
what
I
had gotten
fouled
on the shot.
Yeah, so I, you know, but Thompson made 2 free throws, and that was key. It was 96-93 at that point. And then LeBron scored one of the few shots that he made over Iguodala. The Cavs ran this a couple of times where they would run a 3-1 pick and roll and then foul that immediately with a 3-5 pick and roll, and that worked well. The Warriors did not switch, but LeBron was able to get behind Mozgov and get a pretty good look from three, with Andre trailing the play a little bit.
Yeah, and it was definitely one of those possessions that I had the feeling, like, oh, okay, he's getting going again, even though Andre had done such a good job on him. But then they went down in the other end, and this kind of continued it, is that Andre, he got the ball and he shot an ISO jumper. I'm always somebody who gets frustrated when a non-great shooter takes that shot with a lot of time left on the shot clock.
Yeah, I mean, by the time he took it, it was pretty low, but he got the ball on the left wing with 12 seconds left. Curry had given it up, and that's a play where I think you'd like to see them get it back in Curry's hands if you really don't have anything working by that point in the shot clock. So that was too bad. Then this was the travel by Mozgov, which, did you think that was a walk?
I did not, and I will defer to no greater an authority than DeMarcus Cousins, who tweeted out it was a bad call and that his feet were great.
It looked fine to me too, live. I was sitting down at that end. I was, granted, in the upper deck, but it looked good to me live. It didn't look that bad on a replay either. I mean, people were saying he might have shuffled his pivot feet just a little bit, but you know, that's kind of a reputation call of just like, they just figure, I mean, to me, it looked like he came to a jump stop. You can use either pivot foot there, and he was able to swing back and make what looked like a nice play. But, you know, big oafish 7-footer kind of, you know, not going to get the benefit of the doubt in that situation.
Yeah.
Which is too bad, frankly. I agree.
It was a very nice play, and that led into a Warriors play that drove me more than a little bit crazy. And so the Warriors ran a side pick and roll. Draymond Green got clean out of it, And he went, no, I'm going to pass it to Klay Thompson. And Klay took an absolutely horrendous shot. It was one of those, like, when Klay had that, was it 37-point quarter? When he had that explosion, like, that's a shot in that circumstance. He'd be like, well, you know, okay. But the rest of the game, rest of the situations, no. And in that kind of a situation where you're so close and it was a tie game, I think it was relatively early in the shot clock. I think it was like 10 seconds left. It was frustrating.
Yeah, and Curry had green, but the play was clearly for Klay to come off a couple of pin downs, and JR did a nice job getting over that contested very successfully. So then the next time down, still tied at 96, the Cavs ran a really half-hearted 1-3 pick and roll that didn't force a switch or anything, just ended up being another James ISO on Andre. That was a horrendous shot. He shot like a Dirk 1-foot fadeaway from 19 feet. This was the Mozgov tip back that you talked about. Great play by him, but Bogut could have gotten a better box out to prevent him from jumping and getting that. I did think that Mozgov kind of ate Bogut's lunch in this game. A lot of people were saying that. Would you agree with that, or do you think Bogut played a little better than we're giving him credit for?
I thought Mozgov absolutely outplayed him. I thought top to bottom, and that's surprising. I'm somebody who's very high on Bogut. I picked him for Defensive Player of the Year, but he got outworked, and Mozgov was also huge on the defensive end because he was affecting shots, and he didn't have to really respect everything when Bogut was trying to space out a little bit. He's just like, he's not going to shoot that.
Yeah, and Bogut did have his moments early on in the game with a couple of blocks, but yeah, his help defense was not quite at the area that it was. I mean, I think he got a little bit flummoxed by, you know, just the decision of whether to help or protect the offensive glass quite a few times.
Yeah, and so that led to you want to talk about the next position. So they got an offensive rebound, but they ended up not getting anything from it.
Yeah, as was typical. I mean, they ran another ISO. This was on the left wing. Bogut actually was effective on this play because they got the switch on the 3-1 pick and roll. Klay came needed the help from Bogut, who came over across the lane, and Mozgov didn't start high on this play. He had started on the baseline and actually cut to the dotted line. James fed him after picking up his dribble, and Mozgov just totally bricked. Well, it's a pretty tough shot. I mean, he had to, for a center especially, to run from the baseline to the dotted line and then square up. He, you know, basically missed everything except the backboard. Bogut did a nice job of getting back to contest on that play as well. Green did a nice job on that play, boxing out Thompson. And that's, you know, the perfect example. He wasn't able to get the rebound, but you just get your butt into him enough so he can't jump. And then you'd hope that someone else can get the rebound. And he was successful on that play and quite a few others. Thompson was not able to be effective on the offensive glass down the stretch.
And so the other way you can think about that period of time is that it started out with a minute 41 left and it was tied. The Cavs had a couple of opportunities. They didn't necessarily get great shots, but they had a couple opportunities. But the Warriors come back and they haven't lost any ground.
Yeah, and, you know, despite the fact, you have to give the Warriors credit because even when they were getting all these offensive rebounds and holding the ball, I mean, I would love to see what the time of possession was in this game. You would imagine that, like, Cleveland probably had, like, you know, at least 60% of the time of possession. But the Warriors, even after they would just be stagnant, and they did not get sucked into Cleveland's game. They pushed the ball, and they got another nice play here, a quick 1-4 pick and roll in transition. Smith was on Curry for some reason. Kyrie was on Klay. I don't know if that was what the matchup was at that point, but Kyrie was just stuck to Klay as he ran down to the left corner, and it ended up being Smith. Smith tried to pressure up at half court, and then Green just obliterated him with a screen. Curry crossed over Thompson and just drained a pretty easy 20-foot jump shot to give them a 98-96 lead.
And so then at this point, Cleveland gets the ball down two, and this is a play that I brought up earlier that Mozgov, another nice cut off a 3-2 pick and roll, and he got it. James passing the ball.
Well, so let me stop you there for a second. The 3-2 pick and roll, really the first time they ran it, I was surprised we didn't see more of it.
They should have run it a lot more.
Because, you know, first of all, I think Smith is a little bit more deadly of a shooter than Kyrie as the role guy. And then also when you consider that Steph was on Smith, you know, and not someone who has a ton of length to get back to Smith on that shot, or you force Steph to Smith or switch onto James, which they did. I mean, granted, James was lighting up Thompson as well, but you think even more so on Steph, he would have the advantage. And he did here, and Bogut and Green both freaked out. And that's why Mozgov was able to get the ball and Bogut with a nice foul there. So what were you going to say about that play beforehand?
Well, I thought that it was a great cut by Mozgov. I agree with you. It was a great cut. And those free throws were just, Mozgov is a better free throw shooter than most big men, but you're sitting there going, this is going to swing the game. Like, that was just the feeling that was in my head, and he nailed both of them.
The crowd was just out of its mind during those free throws. And as Ann Killian from the San Francisco Chronicle tweeted, vodka in the veins there for Mozgov.
An excellent tweet.
Yeah.
So then it's a tie game. And a tie 30, game.
31 seconds yeah. left. So we were talking about maybe they'd go for a 2-for-1. I didn't think there was time.
It not enough time.
That there wasn't. Yeah.
And that was, I think you could make an argument it was the biggest defensive possession of the game. Individually,
yeah.
Especially.
Yeah, so really nice after timeout play from Kerr. It started with Curry at the left elbow and with Iguodala at the top. The Cavs somehow got Tristan Thompson switched onto Iguodala. They were switching everything. The play actually started with Iguodala running through kind of an elevator doors type of screen just to get the ball in bounds at the top. And the Cavs switched that with Thompson. So that ended up being key because their one rim protector was away from the rim. Kerr took out Bogut, went back with Barnes to provide some spacing. This is actually the first time that the small unit played at all. And with Thompson outside, Curry was able to set a quick or fake a back screen actually for Klay Thompson on the left wing and then get a screen from Barnes, which was a nice screen to go out to the right wing. Kyrie was way behind him and Curry was able to just blow by him. Right as that occurred, Green was going to set a back screen for Iguodala and Shumpert, who was guarding Green on the switch, was caught completely unawares, was just standing at the elbow. Nobody helped out. It looked like the game was over. Mike Breen even said, as I watched the replay, Curry lays it in. No, he missed it. And just a fantastic block by Kyrie Irving.
The block of his career, as far as I can think of. And I don't want to harp on this because Steph Curry's such a great player, but that is a circumstance that if you go for the dunk, you're going to get the call if anything happens.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a play that I think he realistically could dunk. I mean, him dunking in the half
yeah,
court.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not saying he should have dunked. I'm just saying if he could.
Yeah, I mean, and Kyrie was able to actually block it from the baseline side with his left hand, which you don't see. I thought that was a clean block. Do you agree?
100%.
Yeah, Ayesha Curry did not agree with that assessment, as her tweet indicated. But, you know, that's hopefully players aren't going to start getting fined for what their family members tweet about the refs.
Well, if a Warriors person gets that, it's not going to be Steph first.
Yeah, maybe that's true. So then, you know, there's basically about a 0.5 second differential, and they got James the ball really late, and he was on, Iguodala was on him. I would have liked to have seen some action to get the switch maybe earlier on. Perhaps the thinking was that we don't want to get it to James early because then they can send a hard double and make someone else take the shot. But by the time James got it, there really were only about 7 seconds left to shoot, and he wasn't able to get a good shot. He took a shot that was pretty reminiscent of the shot that he took, and Andre even talked about this in the postgame as a member of the Heat last year in the regular season that beat the Warriors. It was a 3 from the left wing. This was a even tougher shot than that one was. Fading away, Andre did a great job. He said he knew that LeBron was going to go to the step back going left, and he was all over it, did a great job to force a miss.
And then what would have been just one of the craziest swings.
I thought that was in, actually.
I did, too.
It looked like it was in from where I was sitting. I mean, I was thinking there's no way this goes in just because of the nature of the shot, but, like, if that had just been, like, some normal jump shot 18 feet away on the left baseline, I would be like, oh, this looks like it's dead true.
Yeah, I thought it was in, and then so Shumpert ended up with the rebound and shot it, and it barely missed.
Yeah. In the air too. One thing I will note is that if you're the Cavs, everyone should be crashing the offensive glass. Like, they had two guys who were just standing at the 3-point line. I think it was Smith and Irving. Granted, not guys who are going to get, an offensive rebound over the trees, but you might as well crash. There's nothing else to do. Maybe, like, the ball gets tipped around and you get a tip in. There's zero downside with 0.5 seconds, differential. So yeah, you might as well. And they didn't do that. So that's something that coaches should absolutely instruct every player in a situation like that. Just, with 2 seconds left, or as the guy shoots it, just sprint to the glass and just hope something good happens.
Another example of that was huge in this playoffs was Al Horford's tip-in against the Wizards. Basically, nobody on either team came in who was outside of the paint on that play.
Except for him, yeah.
Except for Horford, yeah.
Yeah, so the overtime, it looked like actually Kerr started off wanting to go to the small lineup with Green at center, which would have been, other than that last play of the game, of regulation, first time. But then he decided he was going to go with Azili just to try and get the tip, which he did not win. And nobody really scored until Steph was able to get a switch from Thompson. And all of a sudden, Steph decided that he was going to go to the Dwayne Wade shot fake. And he got two fouls in the overtime in quick succession. The first one on Thompson was very clearly a foul after a switch. So he made both free throws, and then they went to the small lineup. The next time down.
Oh, wait, can I make a quick note?
Please.
So Kerr, after the game, said that his intention the entire time was only to have Festus do the tip.
Yeah.
But there just were no stoppages for 2 minutes. So yeah. That's how he ended up playing. And so the five small, the Draymond at center lineup, only ended up playing, I believe, 4 minutes in the entire game.
Yeah, and was very, very effective. The next time down was a very key play. Barnes got switched on to James. I thought that Barnes did by far the worst job of anybody in the game, just as he did in that game in Cleveland. And I think the reason for that is James is just able to blow by Barnes when he faces him up. It's not so much post-ups as he just can turn and face. And Barnes will, on his hesitation dribble, will get up too high in his stands. I think he's kind of girding himself for, like, LeBron bumping into him and leaning forward to try to offset that. And James will blow by him. He did that here, got right to the rim, but Draymond Green made a great play to get over. And, I thought at first, like, why the heck didn't James try and shoot it over Green? It looked like he was right there. He threw out a kind of a junk pass out to Smith, who ended up having to drive and shoot a tough floater that missed everything. But on second watch, Green was there. And the reason that Green is such a great rim protector, I mean, number one, he's got pretty long arms. But the key is that he actually gets his body in front of the driver. And it's because he's so quick and he has such great help instincts. Getting your body in front of the driver, unless someone is close enough that they can dunk over you, it is really hard to finish. Even if you're a shorter guy at 6'6", the way Green is, even if you're like, a guard, if you can get your chest in between the driver and the guy who's shooting, it's really difficult to score over you. And that's what ended up happening. James had to kind of go to the baseline and throw out that pass to Smith, which he missed.
Yeah, I mean, good defense all around. I was going to save it, but one, obviously it was a small sample size, but one of those crazy stats from this crazy game was that the Draymond at center lineup, they only played 4 minutes. Do you want to guess their net rating in those 4 minutes?
Well, let's see. They were, plus, I guess they're only plus six probably ultimately. So I don't know. Pretty good.
82.5. They had an offense.
Yeah, well, yeah, because Cleveland only scored 2 points,
right?
So,
like, that's it. That's just insane.
Well, and the Warriors with that lineup, you could tell that the Cavs were extremely flummoxed by it. They got great shots every time, like starting with a Clay wide open corner three as they push the ball. The Warriors just get down the floor so fast with that lineup. All the guys really just sprint the floor. Green Barnes is a guy who's great getting out in transition, sprinting the floor. So Clay missed a wide open three there, and that was another key play, those two plays, I think, you know, the James not shooting the layup at the rim, and then Cleveland was able to get into kind of semi-transition. Mozgov got the ball on the right baseline, took a dribble in, and for some reason he tried to, like, recreate one of those Michael Jordan reverse layups with Klay Thompson, you know, not really anybody in front of him. Like, you got it. Like, that was the definition of, like, every junior high coach who, like, yells at the big man for not going up strong. Like, he didn't go up strong. Like, especially since he's a decent free throw shooter, just try and dunk that one, or at least just do a power layup. And instead, he tried to do, like, a right-handed reverse layup going from right to left under the rim. Predictably, it did not go in.
It did not go in, and so that led to another transition look that led to the, I don't want to call it a garbage call, but the bad call, the one.
I'll call it a garbage call. And the reason I say that is, you know, Curry came off a screen in transition, pump fake, got Kyrie in the air. I was basically directly on a line with Curry and the basket. And you could see that where Kyrie jumped, if Curry had just shot a normal shot, and Kyrie probably would not have even made contact with Curry. But because Curry kind of jumped to the right, there was some contact, not a ton, frankly, and a foul was called. I just don't like the call. Like, it's just, that's just call seeking behavior. You're not shooting your normal shot. Why reward someone on that play? But that was a key play, and that got the Warriors up. I think that was a two shot foul there.
Correct. He stepped in to make it a two shot foul.
Yeah. And then the next play down that really ended it was, this is the play that Kyrie actually got injured on, and he turned it over, and he tried to get back on. He actually succeeded enough in at least getting on Thompson, but then Curry was on the right side. You know, there wasn't really like any kind of emergency situation, but James just decided to stand pretty much at the left elbow. Iguodala did a nice cut to the top of the key, and for some reason, James just never recovered back to Iguodala. He just was standing there, not guarding anyone. He was literally not guarding anyone for the entire possession. And so Iguodala drove, Thompson had to step up on him, and then Green set a beautiful screen on Smith, who had crashed down, and Barnes was wide open and his favored left corner three. And that put the Warriors up seven, and we were about done after Curry stripped the ball from James the next time down, leaving Dellavedova.
Yeah, that was really it. Do you want me to go through a couple of the stats that I didn't get to go through so far?
Yeah. I know you spent some time on those, and they're pretty interesting.
Okay, so I hit most of them, but so one that Zach Harper tweeted out and I checked myself is that in Cleveland scored 105.2 points per 100 possessions in the 46 minutes LeBron was on the floor, and that went down in the 7 minutes he didn't play to 50. I'm honestly not sure for even a 7 minute stretch that I've seen an offense score that few points.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, maybe like the Bucks in that game got waxed in game six in the first round. Yeah, I mean, and their defense wasn't too terrible during that period when LeBron was off the floor. But, yeah, I mean, they regressed quite a bit, and that was even with Kyrie. I mean, granted also, though, like, they did get good shots in that second stint without LeBron in the second half, and there were just a few misses that Kyrie had when he was open. So maybe they'll be able to score a little bit better, you would think, but then you consider what's going to happen with Kyrie. And then they might be in trouble.
Yeah, and one of the big issues we've talked a lot, complained about Cleveland's defense or offense, one of the big differences between these teams is you can think of it in terms of touch time or dribbles, just basically how long somebody has the ball before they take a shot. So I'll use touch time. I think that's easier for people to get, is that Cleveland had 34 shots in this game where the shot came with 6 or more seconds of touch time. The Warriors had 14, so that's, you know, about a third. And more than half of Golden State shots came where the person had the ball for less than 2 seconds. I think while sometimes those can be bad looks, generally they're really good. The Warriors did well on them. And, you know, that's, I would say to a degree, that's what you're looking for offensively. And Cleveland was, they were about a third, 36% on those.
Yeah, and I mean, generally those are not going to be great shots with LeBron in there. Maybe they're a little bit better. But, you know, he still shot 7 out of 22 outside the paint. So, he had the jumper. It's actually better than he had been shooting the jump shot. But when you consider 22 field goal attempts outside the paint, I think you have to say that the Warriors' strategy was working pretty well. And when you consider that LeBron took a career-high 38 shots, he only got fouled 5 times. 6 out of 10 at the line, probably could have used a few makes from the line there, as well. But, only getting fouled 5 times while taking 38 shots, that is not a very good ratio. And the Cavs overall didn't even shoot 20 free throws. They did shoot a lot of 3-pointers, but they weren't able to make them. And a lot of them were contested, as we saw.
Yeah, and as you brought up, LeBron had 22 attempts outside of the paint, as Tom Haberstroh sent out. That's and ESPN Stats had it. It's the most shots he's ever taken outside the paint in a postseason game, which is pretty incredible. Another one, something that you and I talk about a lot, secondary assists, hockey assists. Cleveland only had 3 in the game. The Warriors had 8. So that is a notable difference, especially considering the Warriors had more assists. But the crazy thing about this season, and the one it's not really on the secondary assists, LeBron James, his usage rate in this game. So do you want to define a usage rate? I think you're better at it than I am.
It's just the number of shots that are finished either, or I'm sorry, the number of possessions that a player finishes either by a shot, free throw attempt, or turnover.
Yeah, or don't assist count as usage too, right?
Well, so there's
there are two usages. It's
very arcane. Like, there is usage rate and usage percentage. Usage rate was popularized by Hollinger initially in his Pro Basketball Prospectus books, and those included assists. There's some portion included for assists. I forget what the precise formula was. Usage percentage has really become more in vogue, and that's just shooting possessions and turnovers, essentially, does not have a component for assists. And I think usage rate, though people will call it usage rate, I think they really mean usage percentage. And so, for the purposes of this podcast, we're talking usage percentage, really, no component for assists involved.
Yeah. So LeBron's was 45.3%, which is astonishingly high. And he's at 36.8%. is the number I have for his entire playoff run, which I believe is close to a record, right?
Well, I don't know about for playoffs, but I mean, I think that Russell Westbrook was up there. Kobe, his 2006 season, I think the highest I ever recall seeing is around 38. So that's extremely, extremely high. And especially when you consider, this is a finals team. This is theoretically a team where a guy's supposed to have some help. Maybe he doesn't have that much, but those usage percentages are compiled on teams that, are fringe playoff teams with one great player, not a finals team.
Yeah, and I mean, Kyrie did miss a lot of time, Love missed a lot of time, and you did see a spike. His usage percentage was around 30 in the first series, though there were a lot of aberrations in the Celtics series. But yeah, it's been pretty amazing. The other shocking one to me, and this will be the last one I have to throw out there, is the Warriors actually had a higher offensive rebound rate in this game than the Cavaliers did. And it came in a couple of different stretches. And Cleveland did not, they only had 6 minutes because Tristan played so much time. This was the only, in those 6 minutes, the Cavs didn't get any offensive rebounds at all.
Yeah. No, and Thompson was pretty good on the offensive glass, despite the fact that they weren't able to actually convert anything with him out there. So this is a question now going into game two. Since we probably, I don't think we're going to record again before Sunday, what can the Warriors do differently, or should they do anything differently defensively against LeBron?
I don't think they didn't need to do a whole heck of a lot differently. I think that the core philosophy can stay the same, but there are some nuances that they can work in. I think having Iguodala on him more, we saw that LeBron roasted Clay pretty well. I'm not really sure how you completely counteract that, but I think you can reduce it a little bit. And if Draymond can stay out of foul trouble, I'd like to see him on LeBron a little bit more.
Yeah, I think Draymond can't guard LeBron, I don't think, when they have both Thompson and Mozgov in the game together, and that was something that they did a lot. Barnes is nowhere near the rebounder or as good at boxing out as Draymond Green is. I thought Green did well on James in the few possessions that he defended him in the first half when James was at the four. Another thing we didn't talk about, actually, and this is an aside, we'll get back to the James defense. James Jones came in, Blatt kind of relented against the small lineup, but he came back with James Jones instead of Shumpert, which was really odd to me. And, you know, James Jones, not exactly like an all-world defender. Shumpert was hitting his shot. I don't understand why that was the case. I mean, Shumpert did have a few defensive lapses, but, you know, he's under any circumstances, he's going to be better than James Jones.
We are in complete agreement, especially, you know, when you're not, it's not like Jones is a tougher cover.
Yeah, no, well, maybe he is. I mean, I think he actually gives you a little bit more offensively as a knockdown shooter, also a taller guy who can get his shot off. You know, I think, you know, not a hiding place for Curry necessarily.
That's true.
The way, so that's the thought that like now Curry is going to have to guard Kyrie. You could always just put him on Smith too.
Which they did.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'd be interested to know what the thinking was there. Maybe I'll ask that if I go to one of the practices over the weekend. But I think defensively, I think when he is the screener in pick and roll, I might try to drop the guy guarding him back a little bit more, defend it a little bit more like a normal pick and roll and say, all right, you know, beat us with a pick and pop jump shot. Or if he rolls to the basket, say that, you know, you've already got two other help defenders in there because both of the bigs are around as well. So that might be a thought. Another one would be that, as we talked about with Taj Gibson and the Bulls defending these same plays and Noah, a lot of times James was timing his drive to catch the big as he was leaving the 3-second area rather than, as he was in there, and James is a master at that. So I would say you're better off just staying on the opposite block, coming over completely to the near side block, or just staying on the opposite block and waiting until James actually really gets into his move and then coming over full bore, and that you can be effective doing that because you're always leaning that way and you're just ready to move and there's only one thing to do and it's go in that direction. Whereas otherwise you can get your momentum going away and then it's harder to get over there. But overall, James wasn't able to really put them in the goal that badly the way he was against some of these other teams. So I think overall they did a pretty good job, and definitely the idea of a hard double is not something that I would explore unless James really just starts heating up. But overall, you know, what did he? How many shooting possessions did he have in this game?
LeBron?
Yeah.
Let me pull it up.
So yeah, he had 38 shots and then another 10 free throws. So 43 shooting possessions, he had 44 points. Not really that terrible. And then only 6 assists. So I think you can live with that level of efficiency.
There was an interesting historical parallel that Darius Soriano tweeted out, and I don't agree with it fully because it wasn't this caliber of game, but he talked about how he saw a parallel to, it was game 4, I believe, in 2004, when Shaq just had this monster game against the Pistons, and the Lakers lost the game anyway, and it was the idea, I think Phil Jackson said after the game that it was like they blew the game. And
I remember that quote, actually. He said, yeah, we blew a, like, all-time Shaq performance.
Shaq had 36 and 20 in that game.
Yeah, although the difference is that Shaq was, like, still monster efficient.
Yeah, 16 to 21.
But that was also when, you know, they were playing, like, Slava Medvedenko at power forward when Malone had gone out in that series. So, and then he couldn't do anything, not even shoot. So
what? One of the assistant coaches in this game played in that game, Luke Walton.
Yeah.
But the concept, I think, like LeBron, it was more of a kind of a Russell Westbrook stat line game, that it was a lot about having the ball in his hands a lot and doing a lot, but he was hitting a lot of tough shots. And I wrote afterwards that I thought this was Cleveland's best shot at Oracle. And that's not even counting Kyrie's injury. I thought that before that whole thing happened. And that's not to say the series is over in any way, shape, or form, but I think this was their best shot, probably.
I agree with you, especially in that first half and the first quarter. You know, I said this has just been a typical Cleveland playoff performance where you know, it seems like they're not getting the best shots. It seems like the Warriors kind of have the run of play, are getting better shots, but, you know, the Warriors were missing a bunch of shots at the rim that were good shots. Cleveland was hitting the offensive glass. They were ISOing. They're playing ugly ball, but, you know, you look at the scoreboard and they're up 51-48. You know, they got some crazy J.R. Smith shots. Cleveland kind of played their game for most of this game, and they weren't able to come away with it. So I think now the Warriors are a team, especially defensively, that has really been able to find the formula against teams as series have gone on. Cleveland is not going to be breaking out any new wrinkles, I don't think. It's still going to be LeBron ISO every time, and guys like Green and Bogut are going to start to find their groove on when to help, and you know they might break out some new wrinkles defensively. Another thing I would really like to see them do on those ISOs is not let LeBron get to the middle. I don't recall him turning baseline ever on those plays. I mean, it's hard to say, all right, you know, don't let him back down. But to me, what I'd like to do, the only time he turned baseline was he went to a lefty hook and got a dubious foul on Barnes. So I think what you might do is say, all right, if he turns and faces, we're going to send him baseline. And then you limit his passing angles, right? Like, he can go to the opposite corner, but it's really hard to throw the pass back to the top, especially with any steam on it, because you got the backboard kind of in the way. You're probably going to have a player in the way where you're going to have to loop it into the air. And there's not going to be anyone behind him on the wing either to throw it to. And so you limit his passing angles there. And then same thing on the post-ups, force him to spin to the baseline and hopefully bring the help over, timing it so that it gets there right then. Bogut got a block on a play like that. They were able to force another tough play when Green forced him to drive baseline. So that would be the strategy, is try and get him to the baseline and then get that help over there then, when he doesn't have nearly the field of vision to pass as he has when he gets middle.
Well, and that made me think of something that I give credit to Tim Kawakami for articulating, who's a Bay Area writer, excellent writer, reporter, best question asker, in my opinion, in the Bay Area, is the idea that once the Warriors solve you, you're dead. And that's what this team has done. And to get a win like this in a game that they didn't play particularly well, something I don't know, nobody ever tweeted at me, picked it up in the podcast. When I said I picked the Warriors in six on both this show and on my own, I specifically mentioned the Warriors could lose game one in both of those deliberately. I actually anticipated that the Warriors had a pretty good shot of losing this game. They've had some game one struggles early. They had it against the Rockets. They won that game. But I had that feeling, and they didn't play their best game, and they were able to win anyway.
Yeah, I mean, people who were saying that, like, they kind of looked shook in the Memphis series when they had that two-game losing streak, I thought they actually looked the worst that they had at any point in with, you know, just some of the layups that they were passing up. The Cavs defenders at the rim were definitely in their heads at one point, but they're able to get beyond that. And really, after that first quarter, you know, they outscored the Cavs by 18 points in this game.
Do you want to do a little bit of news?
Yeah, I guess we should, because quite the news dump by Woj, that Arne Tellem is going to be joining the Detroit Pistons.
Which is huge. I mean, you and I are both kind of bigger into this world than a lot of other people, but Tellem, I think it's fair to say he's the biggest NBA player agent right now. He has a stable, and it's also fascinating because he's going to a team that has a coach GM. And so how they're going to strike that balance is going to be fascinating to see. But Tellem, the other component of this is he has a major hand in this free agent class. He is the listed primary agent for LaMarcus Aldridge, Marc Gasol, and both Lopez twins. So basically all of the all-star big men that aren't Kevin Love. I don't think it'll change a ton for those guys, but it does change some dynamics.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe he'll take on kind of more of like the same role that Lon Babby has as a president in Phoenix, with Ryan McDonough, more of the day-to-day guy there. Jeff Bauer is officially the GM of the Pistons right now, though Stan Van Gundy kind of has the say. But yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to figure out where exactly the power is going to lie for that team now, especially with Van Gundy supposedly being the supreme authority, you would think that Arne Tellem is not going to start working for the Pistons when he's not going to, you know, leave his amazingly lucrative agent practice to go and not have the final say on the Pistons.
And one crazy kind of cool parallel, people have talked about with Tellem, is that the closest parallel is Bob Myers. Bob Myers, beyond working with Tellem for years, is that Myers actually started as an intern at Arne Tellem's agency in 1997, went all the way through, and actually some of Myers' clients that he had to let go when he started with the Warriors, Tellem represents until, you know, now.
Yeah, although Bob Myers did play college basketball too, which I don't think Arne Tellem did, although I must admit to not being entirely familiar with his biography, so if he did play, sorry.
No, I don't think he did. They're also, Myers is substantially younger.
Yeah. Anything else going on that we have to talk about? Why don't we save the rest of this stuff for a dead period, maybe next week. We got it on the list. Don't worry. Nothing super important that can't wait for a time.
The Nuggets will have a head coach eventually.
Yeah, really. All right. So we wanted to get some questions today. Sorry we didn't. We've gone on a little bit long here. Thank you for submitting those. And hopefully they will still be relevant when we can get to them. But we just had so much to say about this game. I think it's about time to wrap it up for now. I don't think we're going to do anything over the weekend, so we'll probably come back on Sunday night. May have a guest for you guys then who I think you'll enjoy if things work out. So with that pregnant statement, we will sign off for tonight. I'm Nate Duncan. You can follow me on Twitter at NateDuncanNBA. Danny is Danny LaRoux, LEROUX, on Twitter. Please go to Real GM to find the podcast. Subscribe on iTunes. Also, thank you so much to everyone who's been giving us a rating. That's really going to help us to keep this show on the air going forward. I've committed to do it at least through the free agent period, but hopefully this will be a thing for seasons to come, and your ratings and comments really help us to do that. So thanks again for everyone listening. Awesome game one of the NBA Finals. Can't wait to do it again on Sunday night. Till then.